Tensions remain high in Ukraine after the Crimean Parliament voted to approve a declaration of independence that will take effect if Crimea's residents approve a vote to secede from Ukraine and join the Russian Federation in a referendum scheduled for March 16th. With thousands of Russian troops without insignia continuing to occupy Crimea, leaders of Ukraine's interim government have called for the formation of a new National Guard and requested military aid from the U.S. and Britain under the post-Cold War Budapest Memorandum. Both Russian President Vladimir Putin and ousted Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych consider the interim government that was installed in Kiev after the three-month protest occupation there to be illegitimate. They assert that top posts in the new government, including Deputy Prime Minister, Deputy Secretary of National Security, and Secretary of the Ukrainian National Security and Defense Council, are now in the hands of far-right fascist and anti-Semitic groups, Svoboda and Right Sector. Putin says Russia has responded to the threat that these extremist groups pose to the Russian-speaking population in Crimea and eastern Ukraine. Washington and the European Union's threat of economic sanctions against Russia, as well as NATO reconnaissance flights over Poland, Romania, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, have increased already heightened tensions over the situation in Ukraine. Your reporter spoke with Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor and publisher of The Nation magazine, who discusses the triggers that set off the current East-West crisis in Ukraine and options to reach a negotiated settlement.
Since the Clinton administration, the Bill Clinton administration in the 1990s, the U.S.-led West has been on a steady march toward post-Soviet Russia, beginning with what Russian scholar George Kennan called the most fateful era of the post-Cold War period, the expansion of NATO all the way to the Russian border. NATO now includes three formerly Soviet countries, eight or nine Warsaw Pact countries. This may not resonate with your listeners, but it is a touchstone in Russia for a failed post-Soviet, post-Cold War world, and also for broken promises. Former Secretary of State James Baker in the George H.W. administration promised then Russian leader Mikhail Gorbachev that when the Berlin Wall collapsed and Germany was reunified, NATO would not expand. NATO being a Cold War alliance, a military alliance, would not expand one inch eastward. It has expanded. And I think that needs to be a backdrop as we witness events in Ukraine. I also think we need to go back to last November when the European Union proposed to Ukraine that it join the European Association Agreement. First of all, it offered $160 million a year for 5 years. And furthermore, there were security arrangements in this European Association Agreement, which the U.S. Western media has barely reported. These agreements would have led Ukraine to move fairly quickly into NATO. But what's more important as we sit here today is it didn't need to be an either-or situation. The Russian government offered a tripartite agreement. As former German Prime Minister Gerhard Schroeder writes today in the German media, it did not need to be either-or. It was a failure of the EU and the West to make it such. This both-and alternative would have been more reasonable because Ukraine needs partnership with both sides. Ukraine is a bankrupt country. It has been looted by its oligarchs, its political elite over these years. And let me finish here because as the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, sits in Kiev tonight, our reporter out of Kiev says that as details emerge about the IMF loan, there is a sequester plan by the Ukrainian Finance Ministry, which includes a variety of deep reductions in social expenditures, such as cutting pensions by 50%. This will be perhaps more of a trigger for conflict in the next months, if this goes through, than what is happening with Crimea.
Recognizing that Russia has legitimate security interests in the future of Ukraine, and also recognizing the fact that the United States and the European Union offered Ukraine a yes or no answer on whether they would be affiliated economically with Russia or the EU, who is responsible for this serious strategic error which brought us to the current crisis? Obviously, there could have been a compromise to have Ukraine be part of both worlds, both the Russian and European worlds economically. But that didn't happen. Why? That's the key question here, isn't it?
Key question. And we sit here today and we look back at history 25, 30 years ago. We look back at just these recent months. This tragedy, because it is ripping Ukraine apart, And it is leading, perhaps, to a very dangerous escalation with NATO planes in Poland and Romania, with Russian troops in Crimea. How we come down from this may be one answer to your question, because the de-escalation will require security guarantees for Russia, will require, in many ways, maintaining the territorial integrity of Ukraine. It will need new and free elections, if that's possible, which will be inclusive, because Ukraine is so divided that if you don't have the inclusion of eastern and southern parts of Ukraine, which are primarily Russian-speaking, how will the government in Ukraine be representative? There needs to be a pledge, a security guarantee to Russia, reaffirming the pledge that NATO will not extend into Ukraine. And finally, if Ukraine is going to be economically prosperous or even economically sustainable, Ukraine needs to be part of both the EU and the Russian customs union. So there needs to be a dialing back, if it's at all possible, to what would have been more common sense, as I, you know, said, less bluster, more common sense is needed. Why force Ukraine, as the EU did in November, to decide between Russia and the EU?
Well, Katrina, just a final question here. There are those in Washington and Moscow, as you mentioned earlier, who are part of the war party, people who want to see tensions escalate. Some of these people, neocons like John McCain and former Vice President Dick Cheney, who seem hell-bent on reviving the Cold War. And I'm wondering, from where you sit, who benefits from a revival of the Cold War and severe tensions and strains with Russia at this moment?
Well, the American people certainly don't benefit, nor does this country, which needs to rebuild itself at home. The military-industrial complex, as you've probably followed, there's been a drumbeat against the small, barely any defense cuts that have been made due to sequestration in these last months. The oil and gas companies benefit because there'll be a march on to expand the U.S.'s natural gas program and fracking. The neocons and the outdated retro dinosaur-like think tanks will benefit as they howl at the moon to continue a Cold War that benefits no one. And the issues that should preoccupy us, extreme poverty in the world, inequality, climate change, weapons of mass destruction, none of those critical issues which we should tend to in non-military ways will benefit. So I think we should do all we can to ensure that this doesn't move into a robust, full-throated Cold War and find a way forward without it. No one will benefit.
That was Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor and publisher of The Nation magazine and author of the book, The Change I Believe In, Fighting for Progress in the Age of Obama. For more perspectives on the crisis in Ukraine, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.